And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is trends. Each of my guests is revealing trends that are emerging in the United States. My next guest is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for ProPublica, who's investigated Wall Street and the financial collapse. We'll debate the causes of the collapse from his book, The Wall Street Money Machine. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you have a question, you can always call at 639-0008. And keep that number handy because we're going to be giving away two sandwiches or two salads to Urbane Cafe during this particular segment. My next guest, Jesse Eisinger, is a senior reporter for ProPublica covering Wall Street and finance. He writes a regular column for the New York Times Deal Book section. In April 2011, he and his co-author Jake Bernstein were awarded the Pulitzer Prize for national reporting on a series of stories on questionable Wall Street practices that helped make the financial crisis the worst since the Great Depression. Prior to joining ProPublica, Jesse was with the Wall Street Journal as editor of Condé Nast Portfolio, where he predicted the demise of Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers. Before joining Portfolio, he worked at the Wall Street Journal. Earlier in his career, he covered biotechnology and pharmaceuticals for TheStreet.com and Dow Jones Newswire. Prior to that, he lived and worked as a journalist in Chile. Jesse lives in Brooklyn with his wife and daughter joining us from Brooklyn. Hi, Jesse. How are you today?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad to have you on. Thank you for being my guest. As I told you off the air, you're my first Pulitzer Prize winning reporter that I've had on. So congratulations to you for winning that prestigious award.
Thanks so much.
Well, let's start at the beginning because this is a very complex issue. And many of my listeners are in business that are hearing the sound of our voice, but may not be deeply entrenched in the financial side. So let's just start with the basics. What you investigated were collateralized debt obligations, also known as CDOs. What is a CDO and how did it precipitate and how did it amplify the financial collapse that we just experienced?
Sure. So Wall Street came up with a kind of financial engineering. What they did was they took mortgages and they bundled them into mortgage-backed securities and sliced them up and got them rated from the rating agencies based on their risk and return. So the top would be safe, supposedly very safe, and wouldn't throw off a lot of return. The middle would be a little bit riskier and have a little bit higher return, and the bottom would be really risky and have high returns, supposedly. And then what they did another set of round of this where they took securities themselves that were made up of mortgages and rebundled them with new mashing together and slicing up. And those were CDOs. And this was a trillion-plus market, and it really boomed in 2005, 2006, 2007. And this was sort of the heart of the financial crisis when they collapsed.
All right. And Jesse, were the CDOs themselves, which were a bundling of the other financial instruments, were they rated by the credit rating agencies, Standard Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch?
They were rated exactly the same way. The top was AAA and the bottom was unrated because it was so risky. And the middle rounds were rated AA, BBB, et cetera. Yes, and they were supposedly, the top of them were supposedly super safe and rated AAA.
Hmm. Now, your Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting really centered on two major things, your investigation of the hedge fund manager Magnastar, and also the role that the banks had created in creating artificial demand for these CDOs. So take us through, what is Magnastar? Most of my listeners don't have any idea what that company is or what its role was in the financial collapse.
Sure. Magnastar was a hedge fund, which is an investment vehicle for institutions and wealthy individuals out of Evanston, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. And what they did was they came up with an idea where they wanted to go to Wall Street and they say, we will help you get one of these CDOs off the ground. We'll buy the riskiest bottom piece, the piece that you're having a lot of trouble selling. Wall Street loved that because it allowed them, you know, they could sell $100 million to these guys and go out and sell a $1 billion deal and make fees on that. And they sort of thought that, you know, some people thought that Magnastar was a sucker for buying this kind of risky piece that would suffer the first loss losses if anything went wrong. But unbeknownst to some people, but also known quietly, secretly to some of the investment bankers involved in the deal, Magnetar was actually betting against other parts of the deal. They were betting against the middle parts of the deal, primarily. And in those bets were much, much greater than the little investment they had for the bottom. So they would invest $50 million or $100 million in the bottom slice, but then they would have hundreds of millions of dollars of bets against this using derivatives in the same deal. And so it looked like they were aligned with the other investors in the deal. It looked like they had actually bought a piece of the same thing that everybody else had bought, but in fact they were betting against it. And the major finding in our story was also that they pushed investment banks to put riskier stuff into the deals, riskier securities, securities that were more likely to blow up, and of course more likely to blow up and then be profitable for them when their side bets, their derivative bets against the deal collapsed.
All right. My guest is Jesse Eisinger. We're talking about his latest book, The Wall Street Money Machine. And Jesse, help draw some parallels for my listeners. How similar or how different is the actions of Magnetar from the actions of John Paulson over at Goldman Sachs?
Well, John Paulson did a deal. He's a hedge fund manager as well, and he did a deal with Goldman Sachs that was the subject of an SEC fine of $550 million to the investment bank Goldman. Very similar deal with some slight differences, but it was Paulson at his hedge fund did, from what we understand, maybe four or five deals worth $5 to $10 billion. Magnetar did at least 28 CDOs worth at least $40 billion worth. So Magnetar was the big player in this, and Paulson, although he made more money in betting against the housing market in some completely legitimate ways, this is a questionable technique. But he didn't do as much of the questionable technique as Magnetar.
As Magnetar did. Wow. Well, Magnetar is clearly hungry for money. And if this conversation is making you hungry, now is the time that you want to call in to win the two sandwiches or the two salads from Urbane Cafe. I'll take the second caller at 639-0008, 639-0008. Call in. Tom will get your information and we'll send you off those certificates for your sandwiches or your salads. Now, Jesse, back to you talking about the Wall Street Money Machine. The banks also had a role in this as well by creating artificial demand for the CDOs. How were the banks perpetuating this and really accelerating the demise of the economy?
Well, what's unknown or was unknown before our series was that Wall Street was having its own little financial crisis well before the rest of us knew that there was a financial crisis. Their demand really collapsed for these CDO products. They were being bought by insurance companies and banks and institutional investors around the world. And then those investors started pulling away as early 2006. Now, the financial crisis, of course, didn't really land on Main Street until the fall of 2008. This is a year and a half earlier. And two and a half years earlier. And so the investors were leaving the market, and they had a choice. Investment banks had a choice, like Merrill Lynch and Citigroup. They could keep the machine going somehow, or they could wind it up and lose this profit machine. Now, what they did was they kept it going. And one technique for keeping it going was that they created new CDOs, and the new CDOs would buy the pieces of the old CDOs. And then the new CDO would have a piece that was very hard to sell, and so they created a new CDO to buy pieces of that CDO that they had trouble selling that had bought the first CDO. So CDO B would buy CDO A and CDO C would buy CDO B. And that was actually orchestrated by the investment banks, and it kept the game going. But as you can see, it kind of almost is like a little bit of a pyramid scheme.
Well, it is a very much a Ponzi scheme. My guest is Jesse Eisinger, and I was just going to say, this is nothing more than a Ponzi scheme. So where were the regulators in all of this? Who is regulating or was regulating this part of the business?
Well, this is a total collapse of the regulators. The SEC should have been looking at this, and to some extent, they were prohibited by law from looking at this. These are CDOs are private transactions between sophisticated investors, and generally the SEC doesn't look at those deals, and to some extent is restricted from looking at those deals. And then often these deals, CDOs, used derivatives called credit default swaps, which are like insurance contracts, but side bets, really. I bet this thing will go up. You bet this thing will go down. It's like betting on the Super Bowl. and the SEC was prohibited by law, a law that was created by Phil Gramm, the senator for Texas, and ex-senator, and signed by Bill Clinton in 2000, that prevented the SEC from regulating derivatives. So the combination of those two things really made it such that the regulators could, or hands were tied, and even if their hands were tied, they were sort of looking the other way anyway and had their eyes covered. So, they wouldn't have done it anyway, but they weren't allowed to.
Well, and perhaps a lack of funding for SEC investigations during that time period may have entered into it as well. Jesse Eisinger is my guest. We're talking about the Wall Street money machine. Now, Jesse, look at the people in the middle, if you will, and just sort of picture an imaginary banker. If you've got the Wall Street guys there and the bankers, they're always looking for security. They want to be secure in whatever they do. And Wall Street felt that it had security because Magnestar was buying the riskiest portions of these CDOs. Now, they didn't know about all the other stuff going on, but they felt that Magnestar was covering them there. Bankers, on the other hand, just your investment bankers, but not only the investment bankers, also the retail bankers, felt that they had the backing of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to support them. So everybody's feeling very secure that there was security on both sides of these things. How did this all start to unravel?
Well, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac didn't play a large role in the CDOs. They were guaranteeing conforming mortgages, and these deals were made up of non-conforming mortgages, mostly subprime mortgages, and exotic mortgages like option arms and things like that. And so Wall Street actually gravitated to those because there wasn't as much money to be made in the kind of conforming mortgages because Fannie and Freddie would guarantee them. And so, in fact, what happened was, there was all this very risky product, and they were trying to transform it into a form that made it look like that wasn't risky at all. And they would take garbage and have it rated by the rating agencies as AAA gold. And, it served everyone to believe that this was the case. I think everybody was many people were actually pretty cynical about whether they really believed this or not, but as long as they could keep the ball rolling, it was okay. And then, of course, they couldn't keep it going, and it really collapsed in early 2007. Hmm. And that's when the financial crisis really began in earnest and accelerated through the summer of 2007 and then really hit us in the fall of 2008.
All right. My guest is Jesse Eisinger. Jesse, so let me ask you, let's back away from all of the detailed work that you have done and draw some parallels and some similarities between two financial crises. The last one that I can think of was the S&L crises of the 1980s. Then during the crisis, there were several arrests and convictions of executives who were involved in the sketchy lending in the savings and loan thing. But to date, there have been no arrests, no trials, no convictions of any executives, either in the banking industry, the mortgage lending industry, or the credit rating agencies resulting from the financial collapse of 2007 to 2009. Why is that? And certainly the collapse that we've just most recently gone through was way bigger, way more devastating, debilitating to the company, the country, than the savings and loan crisis was in the 1980s. Why haven't we seen more arrests and more convictions?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and it's quite shocking to people. I think that there were was a lack of resources put toward investigations, especially criminal investigations of executives. And then largely Wall Street was given a pass because the administration, particularly Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner's administration, I think felt like they wanted to instill confidence in the financial system, and if we were aggressively throwing bankers in jail, that people would lose confidence. Now, I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I think that if you get all the bad apples out, people have confidence in the good apples. But I think that was not the belief that prevailed in Washington. And then the other issue is that, to be fair, these are extraordinarily complex cases. You know, there were hundreds and hundreds of pages of legal documentation supporting the validity of these deals. And people relied on lots of lawyers, smart lawyers, for advice on these things. And largely they were sophisticated investors. It was German banks buying this stuff, Asian banks. And these, they're supposed to be professionals. They're supposed to know what they're doing. So when they buy, it's harder to prove that they were really bilked.
All right, it's a little bit of case of caveat emptor. My guest is Jesse Eisinger, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of the book, The Wall Street Money Machine. Now, Jesse, you won your Pulitzer Prize, but it's kind of unique in the annals of Pulitzer Prize winners. Tell us, what makes your Pulitzer Prize, your second Pulitzer Prize, so unique?
Right. Well, ProPublica is a nonprofit investigative news organization, and we publish our stories. Some of them we publish in other publications, like The Times, New York Times, the LA Times. We run our stuff on 60 Minutes or National Public Radio or something like that. But also, we publish these stories just simply online. And we were, you know, lucky enough to be awarded the Pulitzer Prize. This is the first prize for something that had only appeared online. It hadn't appeared in print anywhere. And so that was a great honor to be awarded, and I think a testament to the hard work that Jake and I did, and then all the people at ProPublica did, because these were, you know, heavily edited, and there were lots of interactive features as well.
Well, no question that it's an honor to not only you and your co-author Jake on these, but what is interesting to me is it's also a sign of the times that this is the first Pulitzer Prize awarded to something that never appeared in print, and it certainly won't be the last Pulitzer Prize of its kind. Yeah, you started to talk about ProPublica for just a minute. Explain what ProPublica is to my listeners in a little bit more detail, and is ProPublica funded by George Soros?
Okay, so ProPublica is a nonprofit, as I said, investigative journalism outfit. We were formed by the former managing editor of the Wall Street Journal, Paul Steiger, who was my boss for about 7 years. And we are funded by foundations. Mainly we're funded by the Sandler Foundation, which was is a couple that created a mortgage bank, Golden West Financial, that was eventually bought by Wachovia. And we get money from the Ford Foundation, the Pew Foundation. I believe we have a little bit of funding from the Soros Foundation. The key aspect is that none of the funders have any say over any of the things that we cover, and in fact, they have no knowledge of any of the stories. So we're completely editorially independent from any of the funders. And we get lots of individual donations as well. So it's kind of like a public radio model, public television model to some extent. But and we don't make profit. We don't sell our stories. Our stories are free. And we're sort of the answer to the crisis in investigative journalism. Investigative journalism is expensive to do, time-consuming, and mainstream for-profit publications are turning away from it, and we're trying to fill that void.
And it's a good void to be filled. My guest is Jesse Eisinger, author of the book, The Wall Street Money Machine. Jesse, if people like the sound of your voice, they like what they hear, and they want to learn more about you, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
ProPublica.org. Is our website, and you can find my bio, and you can find all our stories. We cover much more than the financial world. We cover the environment, national security, civil justice, things like that.
That's ProPublica.com. Jesse, thank you so much for being my special guest. Appreciate it. We'll be talking to you down the road.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Take care.